You're listening to Radio Hangar Aviation Talk, powered by AI, fueled by passion. Hey there, welcome back to Traffic Pattern. I'm Pattern, and today we're tackling something that every student pilot dreads at least once during training. Crosswind landings. Now, before you tune out thinking you've heard this 100 times, stick with me. Because today, I'm not going to walk you through the textbook version. You already know the textbook version: wing low, top rudder, centerline. Got it. What I want to talk about is the stuff the books don't really cover, the feel of it, the timing, the mistakes I see over and over again on the flight line that nobody seems to address until you're already in the flare, wondering why the airplane is drifting sideways toward the grass. But first, a quick shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. If you've been grinding through your training and you want something to mark those milestones, these folks make beautiful challenge coins for every step of the journey. First solo, private pilot, instrument, commercial. They've got you covered. It's a great way to celebrate the wins that actually matter in this process. Check them out at aviationsoul.com. All right, crosswind landings. Let's get into it. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. The crosswind correction doesn't start in the flare. It starts on downwind. It starts with your awareness. And that's the first thing the books kind of gloss over. When you're in the pattern and you notice the wind is pushing you closer to the runway on downwind, or you're having to crab significantly on base, that's your brain collecting data. That's your crosswind awareness building before you ever turn final. The pilots who struggle most with crosswinds are the ones who don't start thinking about it until they're on short final and suddenly the nose isn't pointed where they want it. By then, you're reacting instead of planning. So tip number one, start your crosswind plan early. On downwind, note the wind. Is it pushing you in? Pushing you out? How much crab are you holding? When you turn base, feel how quickly or slowly the airplane turns. That tells you something about the wind at altitude, and by the time you roll out on final, you should already have a mental picture of what this crosswind is doing to you. Now, let's talk about the two techniques, the crab and the sideslip. Most training programs teach the sideslip method, also called the wing low method, and that's the one I want to focus on because that's what most of you are going to use, especially in trainers like the Cessna 172 or the Piper Cherokee. The textbook says lower the upwind wing into the wind and apply opposite rudder to keep the nose aligned with the runway, and that's correct. That's mechanically accurate. But here's what the textbook doesn't tell you. The amount of bank and rudder you need is not static. It changes constantly on the way down. The wind is not a steady, uniform force. It's gusty. It shifts. It does weird things close to the ground because of buildings and trees and terrain. So if you set your crosswind correction on a half-mile final and then just hold it, you're going to be chasing the airplane all the way down. Instead, think of it as a conversation with the wind. You're constantly adjusting. A little more bank, a little less. Tiny rudder inputs. You're feeling the airplane and responding in real time. This is where the art of flying lives. And honestly, this is something that only comes with practice and repetition. Let me give you a real scenario. You're flying a Cessna 172 at a towered field. The ATIS is reporting winds 270 at 12 gusting 18. The runway is 36. So you've got a left crosswind component of, let's see, roughly 12 knots. That's significant, but it's within the airplane's demonstrated crosswind component of 15 knots. You set up on final, you've got a crab into the wind to maintain your ground track to the runway. Everything looks good up high. But as you descend through about 200 feet above the ground, you start to feel the turbulence from the wind rolling over the hangars on the west side of the field. The airplane gets bumpy, your airspeed is bouncing around. This is the moment where a lot of students freeze. They either hold their crab too long and try to kick it out at the last second, which almost never works well, or they transition to the sideslip too early and then get fatigued, fighting the controls for a long time on final. Here's the sweet spot. Transition from your crab to your sideslip when you're on short final, roughly 300 to 200 feet above the ground. That gives you enough time to get established in the slip, but not so much time that you're exhausted by the time you reach the flare. And this is important. When you transition, do it smoothly. Don't just slam the wing down and stomp on the rudder. Roll into it. Feel the airplane settle into the slip. Let the corrections build gradually. Now here's the part that trips up almost everybody. The flare in a crosswind in a normal landing. You're pulling back, raising the nose, letting the airplane settle. In a crosswind, you're doing all of that while maintaining your bank into the wind and your opposite rudder. And as you slow down in the flare, your controls are becoming less effective because there's less airflow over them, so you actually need more control input as you get slower. This is counterintuitive for students. You're close to the ground. The airplane is moving sideways a little. Every instinct says level the wings, but if you level the wings, the wind pushes you sideways. You drift. You land on the side of the runway or in the grass. Or worse, you touch down in a crab and put a side load on the landing gear that it really doesn't appreciate. So you have to trust the technique. Keep that upwind wing down. Keep the rudder in. And here's the key. you want to touch down on the upwind main wheel first. Just that one wheel, then the other main wheel comes down, then the nose wheel. It's a progressive touchdown. Upwind main, downwind main. Nose, that upwind main wheel first touchdown is what separates a good crosswind landing from a sloppy one. And the reason the books don't emphasize this enough is because it feels weird. It feels like you're landing crooked. You're landing crooked, that's the point. Let me talk about another thing I see all the time. Students who get so fixated on the crosswind correction that they forget about airspeed. In gusty conditions, the general recommendation is to add half the gust factor to your approach speed. So if the wind is 12 gusting 18, the gust factor is 6 knots. Half of that is 3, so you'd add 3 knots to your normal approach speed. In the 172, if your normal final approach speed is 65 knots, you'd fly 68. That extra speed gives you a buffer against wind shear and gusts that could steal your airspeed at a really inconvenient time, like right when you're about to touch down. But here's the trade-off nobody talks about. That extra speed means you're going to float more in the flare. You're carrying extra energy, and floating in a crosswind is dangerous because the longer you're in the flare, the more time the wind has to push you off centerline. So you need to be comfortable with a slightly firmer arrival. Don't try to grease it. A crosswind landing that's firm but on centerline is 1,000 times better than a smooth touchdown that's drifting sideways. The Airman Certification Standards, or ACS, for the private pilot practical test say you need to touch down with the longitudinal axis aligned with the runway and at a safe airspeed. Note that it doesn't say you need to land smoothly, it says safely and aligned. The examiner is looking for control of the airplane, centerline, no side load, that's it. If the landing is a little firm, nobody cares. Let's walk through this together one more time with a different scenario. You're at an uncontrolled field. Windsock is showing a direct crosswind from the right at maybe 10 to 15 knots. You're flying a Cherokee 140. The Cherokee has that wider, more stable gear, which is actually pretty forgiving in crosswinds, but it also has limited rudder authority at low speeds because of that shorter fuselage. You're on final, you transition to your side slip, right wing down, left rudder. But you notice you're running out of rudder. You've got the left pedal almost to the floor, and the airplane still wants to weather vane into the wind. What do you do? This is a critical decision point. If you're out of rudder authority, you cannot safely land in this crosswind. Full stop. It's time to go around, add full power, pitch for your climb speed, clean up the flaps, and either try again or go somewhere with a runway more aligned with the wind. There is no shame in a go-around. Let me say that again. There's no shame in a go-around. In fact, the Federal Aviation Administration specifically includes go-around procedures in the ACS because they want to see that you can make that decision. The examiner will respect you more for recognizing your limits than for forcing a bad landing. I once watched a pilot at my home field force a crosswind landing that was clearly beyond the airplane's capability. Touchdown sideways, blew a tire, went off the runway into the dirt. Nobody was hurt, but the airplane needed a landing gear inspection and new tire and brake assembly. Thousands of dollars because of pride. A go-around costs you 4 minutes and a gallon of fuel. Do the math. Let me give you a few more practical tips, things I've collected over the years from teaching and from my own crosswind experiences. First, look at the far end of the runway during the flare, not at the ground right in front of you. Just like a normal landing, your peripheral vision gives you the best picture of your drift and your height. If you stare at the runway right under the nose, you'll overcontrol. Second, after touchdown, the crosswind correction doesn't stop. You need to keep that aileron into the wind as you roll out. In fact, as you decelerate, you should progressively increase the aileron deflection because the wind is becoming relatively stronger compared to your decreasing speed. Full aileron into the wind by the time you're at taxi speed. This is in the textbooks, but students forget it the moment the wheels touch because they think the landing is over. The landing is not over until you're off the runway and the airplane is stopped or at a safe taxi speed. Third, practice in different airplanes if you can. A crosswind that's barely noticeable in a Cherokee feels totally different in a Cessna 150. The lighter the airplane, the more the wind affects it, and high-wing versus low-wing airplanes behave differently in crosswinds too. The high-wing Cessna wants to roll away from the wind because the fuselage acts like a pendulum below the wing. The low-wing Piper is more stable in roll but can be affected by ground effect differently. Flying different types makes you a more adaptable, more skilled pilot. And fourth, pay attention to what happens below about 50 feet. The wind near the surface is often different from the wind at pattern altitude. It's usually slower due to surface friction, but it can also shift direction because of terrain features and obstacles. If you've been correcting for a left crosswind and suddenly at 50 feet the wind shifts and you need a right correction, that transition has to happen fast. And it only happens fast if you're expecting it. How do you know to expect it? Observation. Watch the windsock as you fly the pattern. If it's swinging around or changing intensity, the surface wind is variable. Expect surprises on short final. Keep your speed up, Keep your head on a swivel. One more thing before I wrap up. Let's talk about the mental game. Crosswind landings are stressful, especially when you're learning. Your instructor might make it look easy, but I promise you, every pilot has had crosswind landings where they were white-knuckling it and just glad to be on the ground. The confidence comes from repetition. There's no shortcut. You have to go out on windy days and practice. I know it's not as fun as flying on a calm sunny morning, but those calm days don't make you a better pilot. The windy days do. If your flight school is always canceling lessons because it's a little breezy, find a day when the crosswind component is manageable, say 7 to 10 knots, and go practice. Get comfortable there. Then work your way up to 12, then 15. And be honest with yourself about your personal minimums. Just because the airplane is demonstrated to handle 15 knots of crosswind doesn't mean you can handle 15 knots of crosswind. Your skill level matters. Your recency matters. Build it up gradually. All right, that's the crosswind debrief. Let me recap the big takeaways. Start planning for the crosswind on downwind, not on short final. Transition from crab to sideslip on short final, around 200 to 300 feet. Touch down on the upwind main wheel first. Add half the gust factor to your approach speed, but expect to float more. Don't be afraid of a firm, but on centerline landing. Go around if you run out of rudder, and keep that aileron into the wind all through the rollout. Go out and practice this. Pick a day with a steady crosswind, fly the pattern, and just do touch and goes. Every landing is a chance to get better. Today's discussion was informed by guidance from the FAA Airplane Flying Handbook and the Airman Certification Standards. As always, Radio Hangar's AI-generated content built by real pilots who care about flight training. If you want to dig deeper into any of this, head over to RadioHangar.com for more episodes and resources. I'm Pattern. Thanks for hanging out in the traffic pattern with me today. Now get out there and go fly. Radio Hangar, keep the blue side up.